Good afternoon to you on a beautiful, sunny, but windy Juneau afternoon here on a Friday. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and today we're going to be talking to Darren Adams and Jim Wilcox about Saturday's grand opening of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. We're going to get the details about this weekend's Black and White Gala fundraiser for the Bartlett Hospital Foundation. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Femme Fatale event, and we'll hear about PFD scammers and how to avoid pitfalls. That's all happening, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, fun, and more, all coming up on a Juneau afternoon, right after National Native News, coming up next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At President Obama's final Tribal Nations Conference in Washington this week, administration officials addressed concerns many tribal leaders have that gains made in Indian country may erode under the next presidential administration. Matt Laszlo has the story.
A recurring theme of this year's tribal conference has been, have no fear, even after President Obama leaves office. Here's Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, Director Sean Donovan addressing tribal leaders.
OMB serves as the institutional memory of the White House, and the majority of my staff are career employees who are dedicated to this work and will carry it on into the next administration.
The administration also fanned out many Native staffers to talk one-on-one with tribal leaders. Scott Aiken is the National Native Americans Coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
So from my perspective as a career employee, the things that we gain positively for tribal sovereignty, whether it's in regardless of administration, is something that we carry forward as a responsibility within the policies that come out of these kinds of executive branch representatives.
Aiken says the Obama administration has worked with tribes from the beginning to make sure the work in Indian country will outlast Obama's time in office.
We've had a number of policies that have come into place that will be as much a legacy for this administration as it is for Indian country, because so much has been invested by Indian country to bring those policies forward. So as a consequence, we'll see this continue forward into future administrations.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The passage of a congressional bill that authorizes drinking and wastewater projects nationwide has tribes in the Northwest celebrating. That's because an amendment to the bill means the 9,000-year-old human remains discovered near Kennewick, Washington, 20 years ago, will be returned for final burial. Emily Schwing has more.
22 members of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation volunteered DNA samples to prove a genetic linkage between Kennewick man and Native Americans. Tribal Chairman Michael Marchand was one of them.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that science could even do that, you know, and test or no test. We just had that feeling, you know, he's your family, you know, and you need to take care of him.
The amendment to repatriate the skeletal remains passed with the Water Resources Development Act of 2016. It was one of the last bills to pass before congressional members take a long recess through the November election. It still has to be reconciled with a Senate version before it heads to the White House for a presidential signature. Five tribes on the Columbia River Plateau have been involved in a long-time legal battle over the skeletal remains. Chuck Sams is the communications director for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Reservation. He says a burial ceremony could take place next February or March.
Each society has its right to determine how best to honor and put away their dead. We in the Plateau have been doing this for thousands of years, and so to have him refound and brought up and left out for this long has been very disconcerting for us, to say the least.
Other tribes who have claimed ancestry to the Ancient One include the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation, the Nez Perce Tribe, and the Wanapum Band of Priest Rapids. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
Congress has passed the Alice Spotted Bear and Walter Sobeleff Commission on Native Children Act. The bill establishes a commission to study federal, state, local, and tribal programs which serve Native children. The commission would also give recommendations about how to make programs more effective. The bill was first passed by the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs in 2015. Committee members are urging President Obama to sign the bill into law. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the National Indian Education Association, the only national Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. You can become a member at NIEA.org.
Support by the first-ever Indigenous Comic Con in Albuquerque, New Mexico, featuring guests, cosplay, movies, games, and much more. You can get your Indigenerd on November 18th through the 20th. More info and tickets at IndigenousComicCon.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host for today. And joining me in the studio right now are from the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, Darren Adams and Jim Wilcox, Sr. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Exciting times there at the food bank. Darren, there's been a major expansion, so there's a kind of fun ceremony happening this weekend.
Well, tomorrow is going to be our open house. We've doubled the size of our building here in the last 6 months. Jim Wilcox has spearheaded that expansion campaign. Jim's very good at twisting arms, and you know, I'm just impressed with how much our community has rallied behind the food bank and supported us in this effort.
Well, Jim, tell me a little bit about the building itself. This is kind of a fun thing.
Well, we started about 3 years ago, and we knew that we had to come up with an extension of some kind on a building because we couldn't buy bulk food because we didn't have any place to start. So I agreed to take on the building if the group approved it. So they approved it and kind of just gave me my run of myself, so I started contacting people. Of course, the first thing we needed was some land.
Okay.
Because we didn't have any land to put the building on. So I went to a person that has got permits from the borough for me in the past, and I told her what we were doing, what we were planning on doing, and we needed property, and we need somebody to get it from the borough. And this is the only person I'm going to name that's actually helped us is Barb Scheinberg.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Barb.
Anyway, I know Barb, sure.
Anyway, she looked up at me and she said, "You don't have any intentions of paying for this, do you?" I said, "Well, not unless I really have to." She said, "Okay, we'll do it for nothing." So well, we went right on down the line, and then we needed surveyors, and we got a surveyor. They volunteered, and the draftsman, I heard about them. They said they wanted to help us, so we went and talked to them, and they did all our draftsman work and our blueprints and all that stuff. And we had, like I say, we had surveyors. That was all free.
Wow,
free,
so just a ton of in-kind donations really there from all these different professionals.
Our estimated cost when we started was $300,000, and we're not even at half of that, and we're just right at done. We got a couple more $1,000 probably to put in for a new furnace and stuff like that.
And give me some of the specs on the new building. What is it?
Well, it's 22 feet wide and 95 feet long. And we built Darren a carport on the end so he can keep his new car in out of the weather.
And an office as well.
So. Yes, yeah. So, and we got lots of, and it's all for storage. And we also, through a very nice company, bought us a 8x10 freezer, a walk-in freezer, which we really needed bad.
So that's great. So tell me, Darren, a little bit on the operations side, why it was so important to get this extra square footage.
So the Southeast Food Bank last year distributed almost 300,000 pounds of food. Our building is, you know, probably about five or six times the size of this studio and that studio combined. You know, a lot of food's coming in, a lot of food's going out. We work with approximately 30 member agencies that pick up food for their programs and clients. We also distribute food to individuals on Saturday mornings. We really did not have enough room to store all the food that was coming in. We'd have a food drive and I'd have crates stacked to the ceiling of food to go through. You know, what this does is it allows us to purchase food in bulk. It allows us to do a food drive, put enough back for a rainy day, and then bring it out when the rainy day comes.
Well, we were just talking about that. There's actually, you know, obviously people are in the giving mood coming up around the holiday seasons, and that's great, and we don't want to discourage that in any way.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there are these times when people aren't thinking about the food bank, and that need is still there, right?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, what I'd like to emphasize is we live in a very generous community, not just with food donations, but financial support. And, you know, people want to help make a difference in the lives of others. But, you know, the Feeding America statistic is that 1 in 6 Americans is at risk of going hungry. So you take a look around. Someone who you might know very well could be that one person. And so we're trying to help feed those people. You know, people.
You were talking about the concept of constant, you know, contribution, the constant need that's there.
Yes.
And so being able to buy bulk food and having this larger area allows you to kind of those shoulder seasons, right?
Exactly.
Allows you
exactly.
to overlap that.
You know, we get a lot of our donations around Thanksgiving and Christmas. There are 10 other months during the year where the same people are going to be hungry that you're going to want to feed on Thanksgiving Day or Christmas Day. So this just allows us a little more wiggle room as far as being able to store food. And
yeah. Now, Jim, you're on the board. What got you interested? What lit a fire under you to get so involved in the food bank?
Well, I don't know. My wife passed away after 50 years, and I needed something to do.
Yeah.
So I went out to the food bank and talked to Darren to see what went on out there. And
Seemed like a worthy cause.
It was
and
4 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, and if I can add to that, the very first conversation we had, Jim came in and said, hey, I'd like to donate to you guys, but I don't believe in donating to a place that I know nothing about. So I'm going to get to know as much as I can about this place. And he's been one of our most faithful volunteers for the last 4 or 5 years.
And it's specifically sort of this idea of helping on this building expansion. What was your background there, and how did that feed in directly?
Well, I've been in Juneau for 59 years, so I know all the contractors. I've used them, probably all of them, at one time or another. So when I would go talk to them about the building, we would ask for contracts to build a certain part of the building. And when they would come back with the cost, I'd say, okay, now, what's our donation going to be? And several of the larger contractors knocked off $10,000 off their contract.
Wow, that's great.
And that's super.
Yeah.
You know, and all they were doing is paying for their labor to do the work. And we built it in record time and way under budget. We built it in 51 working days.
Wow. So
when we started, they said it was going to take at least 6 months.
So it's been in development for 3 years as an idea, planning, design, all that.
Yes.
But then once a shovel went in the ground, 51 days later, we're cutting a ribbon.
We were off and running, yes.
Wow.
We did a little prep work last fall. We did some of the groundwork, got all the stumps out and brought in rock. In compacted rock where the building was going to be.
Yeah.
So when we got back this spring, and we come back a month early from our winter trip, we were ready to go.
And there you go, yeah.
The contractors started right up.
Well, tell me about the ribbon cutting ceremony tomorrow. What's going to be happening?
So tomorrow our open house is at 11 a.m. for whoever wants to show up. It goes from 11 to 1. There will be food and pizza and whatever. Jim has a group showing up to a couple of ribbon.
Chamber of Commerce folks coming?
Yes.
Okay, very cool.
I envision tomorrow as being a huge thank you to everyone who's been involved either directly or indirectly towards making this dream happen.
And this is out in the Industrial Boulevard area on Crazy Horse, right?
Yeah.
So give the address there.
It's 10020 Crazy Horse Drive. It's out by the Fairweather Stables. And there's a big sign out by the road with a red arrow above it.
Okay,
We've
great.
Got a big wall inside the building. We've got lots of big walls. But we put up plywood, and we've got signs from all the people that helped us on the wall, including all the banks. And the banks are 100% behind the food bank. They're super.
That's great. Just a way of sort of saying thank you and acknowledging the contribution everyone made.
We want the rest of the people to come in and see who actually helped with our development. Yeah. And some of the guys don't want their name up there. They don't want their. There's one of the ones that probably gave us more than anybody. Doesn't want his name up or nothing. He just. That's the way he is.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for you guys for coming in. Congratulations. A lot of hard work went into it, a lot of contributions. And
a lot of hours.
Sounds like you had to lean on some people a little bit.
We did.
Jim.
When I took this on, I knew the night that I said I would do it, who I was going to bring back to Juneau for a ramrodder.
Oh.
Denny Mayer was a contractor here for 30 years. And I run into him in the airport and told him what we were going to do next year.
And
so
he came back in.
So I told him to think about
yeah.
it. And then the next spring, he said he would come back. So he'd come back 3 months to Juneau and did the ramrodding for me.
Wow.
That's one reason we got through fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he knows every part of every phase of it, you know.
So. Yeah. Wow, great. Well, it's a great story of everyone getting together, the community really pulling together to contribute to this great, worthy cause. And thanks so much for your guys' contribution to it. And have a great ribbon-cutting ceremony one more time. The time and where it is again?
It'll be at 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. at 10020 Crazy Horse Drive. And I'd just like to once again thank Juneau for supporting us the way you have.
Very cool. Thanks so much. That's Darren Adams and Jim Wilcox, Sr. Thanks again. And that's the ribbon-cutting ceremony happening for the Southeast Alaska Food Bank tomorrow at 11. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Just dropping by the studio with an update about a really important thing that's happening right now with Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. Sarah Lynn, thanks so much for coming in. We wanted to talk very briefly, or not very briefly, a little bit, dive into it about Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So October is designated as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so we like to have a few events going around town, and we have great community partners working with us to sponsor several events. So I'm happy to talk about them.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, there's something called Purple Hair for Aware. So purple is designated the color for domestic violence awareness.
Okay.
And these gals on Facebook posted something about Purple Hair fundraiser. So Aware looked at that, and we're not doing it as a fundraiser, but we're asking people, hey, if you're going to dye your hair purple, send us a photo, and we're going to put it on our Facebook page. And if you think you maybe will, send us a photo. Anyway, so Andy, I hope maybe, you know.
I think I would look good in purple. Sure.
I think you would, too. And it doesn't have to be all, you know, maybe just one side.
Just a little accent there.
A little bit of something. And our friends at the Alaska Academy of Advanced Cosmetology are offering 2 streaks of purple for only $15. Or I think, like, a hair extension might look great on you.
Really? You think so? Some sort of a weave or something? I don't even know.
There's so many possibilities.
There's so many things I could do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one thing that's happening all month long.
Cool.
We also, tomorrow at 4 p.m., we are being gifted a large drum from Noreen Otness. And she's donating this drum to AWARE that we can use as a healing drum for women to sit around and have a drumming circle. So
cool.
We're real very excited about that. We're going to be able to receive that tomorrow at 4 p.m. at CASE, our supportive transitional housing facility. Alaska Native Sisterhood is making dinner for us. So
nice.
Yeah,
that'll
it's real
good.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the calendar.
Yeah.
Okay. October 15th is a Saturday. We have a self-defense class for women and teens and for moms and daughters. So if you come as a group.
Like a partner, kind of partner?
That's cool.
Yeah,
kind of fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Like a connection and bonding and a fun thing for mom and daughters
to do. Someone to practice with and learn the stuff, and then you go home and you remember together. Yeah, that's kind of fun. Yeah, sure.
So we got that
happening. That's cool. October 15th, okay. Very good.
Women of the Moose are sponsoring, this must be the fourth or fifth Frugal Fashion Show. They do a fundraiser for AWARE every year. This year on Sunday, October 23rd, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Juno Moose Family Center. And it's really fun.
Cool.
Anyone can enter. The idea is you are wearing something that costs $25 or less, and you put it together, and there are different categories. It's really very fun.
Frugal fashion. I like it. I like the concept.
Right?
I think that's what I actually do
without
knowing that it was a thing.
See? It's a thing. You could enter. Who knows? You could win a prize. Tea is served, sandwiches, snacks. It's very
fun. Yeah.
And then the last thing we have scheduled on October 26th, in partnership with Alaska Now and the Treadwell Arena, we are going to paint the ice purple.
Oh, cool.
See, you get the purple thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a purple ice skate. Not only that, it's free to all ages. So we've got a couple sponsors, Stephen Pfister and Hans Chester, and they are providing the space for all of us. We're accepting new bath towel donations. The drummers, we talked about Maureen, the drum, are also going to be present. So we'll have some drumming going on.
Very cool.
It should just be fun. You know, these events are kind of fun events. Like, we want to raise awareness.
Sure, yeah.
In ways that are friendly, that help people recognize, like, this is a pervasive issue for women and for our community. So that means for men, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we just invite everyone to participate in whatever way fits for them.
Yeah, and it's in some ways it's awareness of this terrible thing that can happen and does happen, but it's also a way of encouraging health and overall health. So why not do it in a fun and healthy way of things like ice skating or frugal fashion or those kinds of things?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's great. Domestic Violence Awareness Month is all October, starting tomorrow. And Sarah Lynn, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
And if people would like more information or to register, you know, for self-defense, we ask people to register. Please call AWARE at 586-6623 if anyone would like information about domestic or sexual violence or themselves is looking for support. Please call AWARE, 586-6623. Our services are free and confidential.
Great. Sarah Lynn, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Likewise, Andy.
Okay. Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this windy Friday. It's beautiful out, though. Maria Yekutiel and Sally Schneider are in the studio with me. Maria, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
Yekutiel. I mispronounced your name just a little bit. I said Yekutiel is the correct name. And both here talking about the Black and White Gala fundraiser, which you just said, it's going to be great. But it's also
sold out.
So we're not even here to kind of promote getting tickets to it. Let's talk a little bit about what it is, just so people who have tickets can get pumped up about it.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, absolutely. So Saturday, October 8th, which is next Saturday, we are going to have the Bartlett Foundation's annual Black and White Gala. And the focus this year is to increase access to behavioral wellness in our community. And it's going to be a dinner, and there's going to be live music, dancing, also fantastic auction items. But also, we're very excited about being able to raise funds for behavioral psychiatric telehealth equipment. And Sally is going to be here to talk to us about that. And,
Sally, what's your title there?
I'm the Chief Behavioral Health Officer at Bartlett.
Okay, and so tell me about what this is raising funds for specifically, and how you use that stuff.
This is a very exciting time in Alaska, because what you use telehealth for is to help increase access, particularly to different disciplines that we may not have in our community. This year is different because the governor signed legislation that allows telehealth to be more fully utilized within the state. So we're going to be able to take advantage to be able to bring that specialty in. We're also looking at issues of training therapists in the community. And Maria did a beautiful job with the foundation of setting up a scholarship fund. And we've had 12 applicants, more. The deadline is today. And that will help people get training to be able to develop as professionals. So we'll be able to increase access and expertise.
So specifically, this is kind of telemedicine. So how does that work with behavioral medicine? How does that? What are some examples of the way that's done?
Well, this is really a fascinating process because technology has changed so much over the years. So what happens is you have a provider in a different community. They have an Alaska license, and they are literally able to kind of beam in over telehealth equipment. They're able to help physicians in the emergency room get a second opinion. They're able to actually sit down with a therapist and be able to do an evaluation of a patient. It doesn't replace the real and human touch, but what it can do is help provide an emergency intervention when needed, or be able to help a patient that is stabilized receive ongoing treatment without maybe having to leave town for that.
Yeah, which I think would be really obviously very valuable, especially in these spread out communities that we have in Southeast Alaska.
Yes, it could be an incredible outreach in more rural areas such as we're in. And it can also be truly with issues with weather barriers. It can keep care on time when they need it here. If they can't get out to Seattle or some area, they may be going to.
Very good. So tell me, the gala fundraiser, I mean, it's fun because it's a chance. We don't get to dress up that much in Juneau, right? So it's going to be fun because you get to actually dress up, right?
Yes, it's black and white. But tuxedos are definitely optional, so anything goes. It's Juneau. And we're happy to see you any which way you come in. And
black and white extra tufts only, right?
We can do that if you like.
If you're going to wear extra tufts, you got to paint them.
Yep, we could do that, definitely. The business community has been amazing, as always, and they have come forward with some very nice items for our auctions. That we have some travel packages as well that are pretty interesting.
Cool. So people who have already gotten tickets, get prepared because there's auction items going on. Is there like a dessert auction happening too?
There is a dessert auction.
That's always fun.
There is, and I have donated my famous chocolate chip cookies that are famous across the country, as well as the recipe will be included.
Oh, very good. Oh, the secret recipe.
The secret recipe.
I'll bet you left one secret ingredient out.
I did not.
It's the actual recipe.
But although it's sold out, I would like to encourage anybody who still wants to support us by sending in a donation. They could do that. They could do it through the website, brhfoundation.org. You can just call me up, and we'll be happy to help with that.
Fundraiser that happens for the Bartlett. This is for Bartlett Hospital Foundation. So that's the foundation this goes to, and that foundation probably funds different projects, you know, depending on the year. How was it decided that this would be the project to be funded this year?
Right. So the mission of the foundation is to provide resources for Bartlett Regional Hospital because it is a city-owned hospital, so we can supplement the budget process in that way. The board of directors meets early in the year and selects a project to fund. And this year it was a little later because this was funded because the governor approved signed legislation for the use of telehealth equipment.
So a little bit out of the ordinary the way that affected things.
Yeah. Right. We usually have the focus of the fundraiser earlier, but this year was a little later. But it didn't matter. We knew we were going to do something, and this was perfect.
Yeah.
And the timing coincided perfectly because it is Mental Illness Awareness Week, a time when we call our country's attention to what really is going on with mental illness, which is really a very treatable thing now in many degrees. So those of us in our field like to really call attention to helping people realize that it affects 1 in 4 Americans over the course of their lifetime. There is treatment now, and the earlier you get treatment and diagnosis, the better the outcomes.
It does seem like there have been such leaps when you think about, say, the past 50 or 60 years of progress in the field of mental health, the extraordinary understanding and leaps that have happened in treatment. Am I right about that? I mean,
it is all about the brain and all about relationships. And in the last 5 years, the strides made to be able to diagnose, to be able to medicate differently, to how the brain works, affects it.
Why 5 years? What's the thing that's happened in the last 5 years?
There has been a tremendous amount of research in the brain and trauma, largely related to the military, to follow up after wars, to several events that happened in our country, and looking at how trauma affects the brain. And we now have radiological imaging scanning equipment so we can see what happens in the brain. We can see what happens in a healthy brain. We can see what happens with a sick brain. And we just have the capacity now to see this is real.
Mm, so these kinds of things we hear about as concussions and those kinds of things and actual brain injuries that maybe weren't recognized as brain injuries but in affecting mental health is something that's
an excellent pickup,
yeah.
Because truly there's a whole field of research on concussion and TBI and post-traumatic brain injury,
mm-hmm.
and ways to work with that and ways that are helpful and ways that aren't helpful. And the more people we can educate on each of those specialties, the better.
Wow, so it's really important work, and it's being helped by the Black and White Gala fundraiser, which is a benefit for the Bartlett Hospital Foundation. Thanks so much. I'm so glad it got sold out. That's exciting, right?
Very exciting.
Success already.
Yes.
Go in knowing, hey, we got to sell out. That's terrific.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, Maria,
thanks
so much. And Sally, thanks so much for coming in. Coming up next, here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 30th of September, 2016. 1452, on this date, the first section of the Gutenberg Bible was finished in Mainz, Germany, by the printer Johannes Gutenberg, considered by some the most important invention of 1,000 years. Mark Twain said, "What the world is today, good and bad, it owes to Gutenberg." It's the birthday of the man who said, "Poetry is a way of looking at the world for the first time." W.S. Merwin, born New York City, 1927, wrote poems at Princeton, often showed his poems to the poet John Barrowman, then a graduate student. Merwin asked how to know if his poems were any good. Barrowman replied, "You can't. You can never be sure. You die without knowing." W.S. Merwin lives in Hawaii, in a house built on an old pineapple farm where he preserves many native plants, particularly palm trees. Merwin, who said, "On the last day of the world, I would want to plant a tree." It's the birthday of the man who said, "Life is a moderately good play with a badly written third act." Truman Capote, born New Orleans, 1924, author of Breakfast at Tiffany's, author of In Cold Blood. And it's the birthday of the writer Elie Wiesel, born in a small village in Transylvania, 1928. When he was 15, he and his family were taken to Auschwitz, his mother, sister, father, all killed before the war was over. He survived the camp. He couldn't write about it for 10 years. Finally, his mentor, François Mauriac, persuaded Wiesel to write about the war, and he wrote his memoir called Night. It came out in 1955. It's become one of the most widely read books about the Holocaust. He wrote about being marched with other prisoners past a gallows where the Nazis had hung three persons, two men who were no longer alive, but the third rope was still moving, a child, too light to be hanged, was still breathing. So he remained writhing before our eyes, and we were forced to look at him at close range. Behind me, I heard a man asking, "For God's sake, where is God?" And from within me, I heard a voice answer, "Where is he? This is where, hanging here from this gallows." Here's a poem by W.S. Merwin on his birthday, "Old Man at Home Alone in the Morning." There are questions that I no longer ask, and others that I have not asked for a long time that I return to and dust off and discover that I'm smiling. And the question has always been me, and that it is no question at all, but that it means different things at the same time. Yes, I am old now, and I am the child. I remember what are called the old days, and there is no one to ask how they became the old days. And if I ask myself, there is no answer. So, this is old, and what I have become. And the answer is something I would come to later when I was old, but this morning is not old, and I am the morning in which the autumn leaves have no question as the breeze passes through them and is gone. A poem by W.S. Merwin, "Old Man at Home Alone in the Morning," from his collection Garden Time, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Not on film. They're going to be live. They're going to be ladies. They're going to be femme fatale. It's coming up. It's happening here this weekend. Femme fatale is happening as a fundraiser for 4A's. And Laura Herman's here from 4A's.
Hello.
And also in the studio with me is Andrew Castelli, a.k.a. Ivana.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And also Cody Frazier's here. And you're also known as Frieza de Lust when you are in
yep.
your other form,
when
you have metamorphosized.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me, first of all, tell me what drew you, I'll start with you, Cody, what drew you to this art form, to this fun entertainment form, to this, to doing this thing? Of
I've done theater, like, growing up my entire life, and then, I don't know, I kind of always just really enjoyed the whole, like, female art illusion kind of thing. I've seen people do it before. And then after RuPaul's Drag Race and all that, I was like, so this really can be a thing. And as soon as I ended up moving to Anchorage, I met my drag mom, Ivana. And she put me in drag for the first time. I looked like a foot. But It was a lot of fun.
I looked like a foot.
A well-dressed foot.
It was something, definitely.
Burn the pictures.
Well, that's an interesting thing, actually, when you say that, like, because you have to find your look, right?
Yeah.
You probably have to really find the character and the look and those things. So the first time you go out, you're probably really uncomfortable, right?
I mean, oh, almost certainly. Yeah. The first time, you know, you think you have a look that you want to go for. You know, I want to be just like this stereotype of woman. And like when the first time I put Cody in drag, it was like, yeah, you're going to be this blonde bombshell, and ended up completely being out of space doll. Now it's crazy, like a lot of color and a lot of fun to work with Cody, because it's completely different from what we first thought he was going to look like.
Part of what you're doing, I guess, is just you're kind of accentuating features, you're maybe softening features or refining
a lot of contouring.
Them, those kinds of things, right? So you're
it's literally transforming your entire face. Like, she did my makeup, like, I do it myself now. But it really is turning yourself completely different.
Yeah.
People don't recognize us out of drag.
Yeah.
They really don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the only people recognize me is because of my tattoo. That's really it.
They just
if they see that, they're like, were you that was, hi, I was a crazy person. I'm sorry. It was all in good fun. I promise.
Party.
Don't hate me.
Party.
Well, let's take one quick moment to talk a little bit about 4A's. We'll talk more about the show. Right. And the first one's happening tonight at the Rendezvous. The second one's tomorrow night at Rockwell.
Yeah.
Tonight's locals focused, right?
Yeah. Tonight only locals are performing. We'll have a panel of local judges like Sam Keto III and Jesse Keel and also Ivana Kay. And they'll be judging all the local performers on creativity and their look. Whoever wins tonight, but in the drag queen and the drag kings, will actually be featured in the show tomorrow. And they'll go up against Mr. and Miss Gay Alaska,
nice.
Our reigning performers that
nice.
Are here.
I'm pulling for Marty Wiener, but that's just because, you know.
You gotta pull for your family.
No, he's a good dude, man.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
love him.
And he did a fantastic job last year. We're so excited. Gigi Monroe, who's also my coworker, James Hoagland, has done an amazing job helping to foster drag in Juneau, and we're so excited to be having the benefits of that.
Yeah, yeah. I got to. I used to host this show called Wearable Arts, and the first year that James moved to town, he came out doing wearable arts.
Nice.
And it was one of those really interesting moments, because it was sort of a little bit what you're talking about. I had never met him out of drag.
Mm.
And so I literally, until the day of, I just thought, well, this is this amazing woman.
This new woman in town.
Yeah, like, she's just so flamboyant and amazing, right? And then, like, you meet James, who's very mild-mannered
right?
and very
He's
nice
wonderful.
Guy. Yeah, and you realize, wow, like, you talk about that. Transformation, is that something that you feel? I mean, it seems like it's this utter... You just talked about you were this crazy person, right?
Like, I'm a very, like, bubbly person. That's just, like, when... But when I become Frieza, like, when all that makeup comes on and then that wig clicks on, all those bobby pins, and I'm in full, like, outfit, costume, I'm a completely different person. Like, I don't... It's kind of, like, therapeutic for me, too. Like, it's also, like, the things that have always, like, frustrated you, or you can put it into that, but
yeah.
It really is, like...
Well, that's
a completely different side of who you are.
That sounds to me like a lot of performers, no matter what art form they're doing, or artists, no matter what art form they're doing, that's a common thing, I would think, right? They're taking these frustrations, or they're taking these issues, they're working it out through their artwork, through
Pretty
their
much.
Performance,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and like our drag dad said back in Anchorage, he says, leave it on the stage, you know, just feel it, but leave it on the stage. You know, just work throughout and just express your feelings out there. Kill the performance.
Yeah.
That's you're just going to leave your feelings out there, and you're just going to feel so much better about what you did, regardless.
How much of the performance that you do is kind of improvised, and how much of it is really set?
Well, I'm 50-50. There are nights where... Or not nights, but there are weeks, because we perform weekly at Matt Myrna's in Anchorage, and there are weeks where I don't know what I'm doing until the day off. And it's very improvised, very, okay, I had this costume already, I found this song, it works together.
Even the look, or you're saying the same look?
Similar. Similar look. Just change one or two things about it and just go and improvise it. If it sticks, great. But there are some other things that you work on and you're like, I want this to be funny. I want to be remembered by this. And that's sort of what we brought for the show tomorrow at the Rockwell. We are bringing stuff that we have worked hard on, and it's kind of like living our little footprint and mm-hmm. be like, remember us by this.
It is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because so much of it is dance, music, performance, you know, amazing, spectacular show. But there's a real humor element.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? There's always a real humor element to it, right? There's a
surprise
certain...
for bends and wigs, right? Guys and dresses right. and, like, wigs.
Well, and there's this campy tradition, campy kind of really, like, hamming it up tradition of drag. And so that's definitely, it's hilarious. We had a great performer last year who wasn't able to come this year named Callie Delgado. And she does this Miley Cyrus song, but she live sings it and, you know, just does... just doesn't say the actual words. She'll like change the words and just really like ham it up. So it's going to be a blast. It is 100% guaranteed. I will personally give a money back guarantee.
You don't have fun.
of my personal dollars. But yeah, and the cool thing about it is that we're having a blast. We're having a fantastic time. It's a great show and it's all going to a good cause. When we're talking about HIV care and prevention services here in the Southeast. All of the money that's raised at Femme Fatale stays in this area. It doesn't go to any other statewide services. It helps James have a caseload of 33 HIV-positive individuals in the Southeast who need additional services, whether that's help with insurance, help with housing. Because what we find is actually if a HIV-positive person is able to stay housed, have a good nutrition, and stay on their medication, they're not able to pass the disease anymore. So it's so important to be able to support these folks to be on their medications every day and be living a healthy life so that they don't have the possibility of passing it along.
And just for folks who may not be aware of 4-H, what are sort of the basic services you're providing?
Yeah, so we're an Alaskan organization. It's the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association. We're the leading HIV care and prevention agency in the state of Alaska. We serve all of Alaska with the exception of Fairbanks because they have their own AIDS service organization. And so we're mostly based in Anchorage, but we have a Juneau office. We have had one for almost 10 years, I think, if not more. And what we have here in town is a syringe exchange to help make sure that people who are injecting drugs are not getting HIV or hepatitis C. And we also do what I mentioned, the care side of making sure that folks who have HIV are able to stay healthy and make sure that we're not passing along the disease.
Yeah, great cause and something that's really needed and a big part of keeping disease and check all kinds of that.
Right.
All, you know, all
well,
kinds
and we
of,
have
yeah.
six new. So it's the James show in Juneau. You know, he's just himself for a part time, and his caseload has gone from I think 27 to 33 this year, which is a lot.
Right.
And those aren't necessarily new infections, but that's on top of tripling the amount of syringes that we gave out last year because so many more people are learning about the service. So many more people are addicted to heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such an important service because one, you keep them from getting HIV and hepatitis. But two, the second they're ready to go into treatment or to look at other options, they have a relationship that's open and honest with a service provider to get them into those programs mm-hmm. and help tailor those referrals.
Someone they trust, someone that's encouraging help.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people have this kind of gut reaction like, well, I don't want to give drug supplies to drug users. Like, that's not helping. But it is helping because, one, they're not then having to deal with serious diseases after addiction. We always say we want life after addiction to be disease-free. But then also, we're able to help get into programs because we know their life story, we know why they're using drugs, and we've built that relationship.
Yeah, really serious work, but a fun event.
Right?
Yeah.
Fundraiser doesn't have to be serious for it to be fun.
I mean, you're coming to see men in wigs. It doesn't get any funnier than that.
There you go. Right. You're starting off with a baseline.
There's a lot of drag kings, too. So we also have women who are dressing in drag as men. So.
And it's pretty impressive as well.
And it's your challenge to figure out who is what.
Pretty much. I mean, we invite you. We send an invitation for all of you to come to see the drag kings because, I mean, personally, Henrik Dickerson is one of the hottest men I have ever met.
Yeah.
All right.
So amazing.
Well, it's all happening. Starts tonight. at the Rendezvous, and then it switches over to Rockwell tomorrow night. Tonight's local focused, and then the winner of the Drag King and Drag Queen tonight gets to perform tomorrow night at Rockwell as well. And
doors at 7, show at 8:30 for both nights. Tonight is a suggested $10 donation. Tomorrow is ticketed, so it's a little bit more. You can get tickets online at alaskanaids.org.
And that's it. It's all happening. It's Femme Fatale,
and
it's always a blast. You guys have a great show. Thanks so much
for
coming in.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. In September, a river of raptors flows through Veracruz State in eastern Mexico. In his book, Living on the Wind, Scott Wiedensahl describes counting the birds there as they circle in kettles on columns of rising warm air, and then drift steadily south. Nothing in a lifetime of birdwatching had prepared me for this spectacle. The kettles grew to almost frightening proportions, 20 or 30,000 hawks in each one. From 2 to 3 o'clock, we counted 126,516 broad-winged hawks. Nearly 46,000 of them in one 10-minute period. The next hour there were even more, along with nearly 11,000 turkey vultures. A steady stream of kestrels was moving low along the horizon, passing at a rate of 5 per minute, their wings flashing in the sun like a thin reflection off the distant gulf. And so it went for hours. From our hot, dusty rooftop in Cardell, we'd counted more than 435,000 raptors. As our sense of numbed disbelief gave way to comprehension, we realized we'd witnessed, by far, the heaviest hawk migration ever recorded anywhere in the world. Since that day in 1992, the record has been far eclipsed. Some days more than 1 million birds have been counted passing through the narrow, vulnerable corridor of Veracruz. Today's show, brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. Find a link to Wiedensahl's book at birdnote.org.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And next we're going to be talking about PFD scammers. It's a problem that happens as the PFD checks come out with the Better Business Bureau in Anchorage. It's Michelle Tabler. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, sure.
So tell us about this. It's something, you know, I had never really quite thought about before, but of course that's what's going on. Every scammer in the world knows that people in Alaska right now are getting checks, and so there must be some kind of ne'er-do-wells out there looking for people to slip up. And tell me a little bit about some of the things that people should be watching out for.
Well, you know, of course we have these scams going on constantly, but the scammers, and there's a whole group of scammers, are well aware about the money that's coming out next week. We're going to see, and we've been seeing, an influx of and a whole bunch of phone calls on the IRS scams, where people get a phone call or they get a robocall saying that they've been recently audited, that they're the IRS requires money. They especially prey on people that are recently widowed or have become widows because they kind of watch the obituaries on that, and it could be that your spouse is the one that handled the taxes. But anyway, they call and they say that you owe money, you're about to be arrested, your driver's license is going to be revoked, and you need to wire the money right away.
Gosh, it's miserable, isn't it? People.
It is, but, you know, I've had people falling for this and sending money. And now they're getting to the point where sometimes they don't ask to wire the money. They have people go put it on a Green Dot card, either a refillable gift card, an iTunes card, or an Amazon card, and then they want you to call back with the number on the back of it.
So there's certain things that when people, you know, are there certain things that ways that people can know it, there are triggers of, wow, this doesn't seem right, or what are some of the advice that you give people that might run into this?
Well, number one, any of these unsolicited phone calls, whether it's for a charity, whether it's one of these imposter things, they say that you've won the sweepstakes, you've won the lottery, they're the IRS or the court system calling because you didn't show up for jury duty. Any unsolicited call, any of those places are not going to call you. My advice to everybody is just hang up the phone. Don't even get into a conversation with these people. They're good, and once they see that you're going to talk to them, they are relentless.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep calling you back, and you just don't want to do that. So my advice is hang up. If you get any of this in an email, you can't ever trust it because they've gotten really good at copy and pasting. It might really look like from your credit card company or from your bank or from a lottery winning. You don't want to ever click on a link because that could put malware on your computer.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really important is that emails can come in and look like they're from someone you trust.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's an unsolicited thing, you can't trust it.
Don't trust it. Don't click on it. We advise if you've got a question on it, either call directly with the phone number that you have or go directly to that website, whether it's your bank or credit card, and see if they're trying to contact you. But don't ever click on a link.
Is there any way of measuring that you're able to measure the uptick in these kinds of schemes that happen around October and when the PFDs are coming out?
Well, we do. You see more ads for these vacation seminars, flip these houses. You know, you see those sorts of things come to town about this time of year, and this is why, because people have, you know, more money right now. We just advise people to be wary. Some of the stuff we can't say is exactly illegal, but, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Right.
And we just advise people. We have on our website, bbb.org, you can put that bbb.org/scam tracker. You can actually look up and drill down to by the city, by the state, or the whole U.S., what scams are happening. You can even drill down on the types of scams. We encourage people to go on there. If they get these types of phone calls, go on and put it on our scam tracker because we watch it closely to see what's trending. So we'll be watching that over the next week or two to see what's happening. But we only get the information if people actually go online and do that.
Well, now this is cool. This is a way to fight back, actually.
It's a way to fight back.
Right? You can be the eyes and ears of the Better Business Bureau and help identify new scams, different scams, concentrations of scams, that kind of thing. So is that BBS, BBBS?
BBB.org/scam tracker.
BBB.org/scam tracker. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you can always do BBB.org if you're looking for businesses in Alaska. Just put /Alaska, look up businesses, look for types of businesses, and you can see what their ratings are. You can see if they've had any complaints. So always use us as a resource for that sort of thing. And then when we see these things come in, then we go out to the public to publicize this.
Right. So, yeah, that's the next thing I was going to ask. Your Better Business Bureau is obviously working 12 months a year, not just in October when this is happening. What are some
right.
of the main things that are a little bit different about how you're tasked with doing things today versus how they might have been 10, 20 years ago?
Oh, well, I mean, just the whole Internet situation. I mean, they can get so much information from us by Googling our name. We're on social media. How many of us want to and also do post pictures while we're on vacation? So that means, nobody might be at our house. So you've got to be really careful with what you're putting out there. You go to genealogical sites. Look what you're putting out there, your full name, your date of birth, the city and state where you were born, your mother's maiden name, the names of your kids, which is part of the grandparent scam. Look how much information they can
wow.
get about you. And those are all questions, privacy questions for your bank and your credit card companies.
Yeah, absolutely they are. What was your grandmother's, you know, first name and things like that are obvious, are always those are the types of things that are always asked.
What city where you were born? So we advise people on that, on these sorts of things, on these security questions and these privacy questions, not to give the real answer. Make up an answer.
Well, Michelle Taylor, thanks so much for taking
sure.
the call here. Better Business Bureau up in Anchorage, and that's BBB.org. You can go to Scam Trackers on that site,
mm-hmm.
and you can also get all the other services that Better Business Bureau provides right there on that site. Michelle, thanks so much.
Oh, sure. Anytime.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
Yes, thank you. Well, that's it for a Juneau Afternoon for today. Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate all the guests who came in. Lots going on this weekend. The Black and White Gala fundraiser that's happening, sold out, unfortunately. Tomorrow, go check out the food bank grand opening. That's at 11 o'clock. And also the drag shows with the Femme Fatale happening tonight and tomorrow night. That's it for me. Have a great weekend, everyone.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast.